Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, October 28, 2021. Sudan's military leader fires six top Sudanese diplomats. And relatives of a South Sudanese student killed during protests in the Sudanese capital Khartoum are demanding for justice.
At the time, his family could not reach him on his telephone because of the poor network connection. According to the information we received here, the late Sally was missing until the following morning.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of people have taken to the streets since Monday's takeover led by Armed Forces Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and several others have been killed in clashes with security forces. Latest reports also say General al-Burhan has fired ambassadors to the US, China, the European Union, France, Qatar, and the head of the Sudanese mission in Geneva. After the military takeover of the Sudanese government, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with the ousted Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who was released from custody on Tuesday. The U.S. is calling for a return to civilian-led transition to democracy. The African Union has suspended Sudan's participation in all activities until the restoration of the civilian-led authority. Meanwhile, global powers have condemned the military takeover in Sudan and called on security forces to release those who were detained unlawfully. The family of a South Sudanese student killed in the Sudanese capital Khartoum following the military takeover this week is calling for justice. University student Mohammed Salih Kur was shot by security forces as he returned from the university on Monday night. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Umar Yusuf Kur's uncle says his nephew was shot at the bus station while coming back from the university on Monday evening, the day military leaders Abdul Fattah al-Burhan dissolved the government and arrested some civilian leaders. Yusuf says doctors confirmed that Kur died immediately after being shot in the head. He says there was no cell phone network in Sudan on the day of the military takeover, and that delayed getting word of Kur's death to his family in Khartoum.
At the time, his family could not reach him on his telephone because of the poor network connection. According to the information we received here, the late Sally was missing until the following morning. So when they got the information that late Sally was shot, someone called the family using late Sally's phone because he found the last phone call the late made was to his mother. They immediately rushed there since all roads were closed, but they managed to reach the scene and they found his body dead.
Kur was a first-year student of electrical engineering at Imam Al-Hadi University in Khartoum. Yusuf describes 18-year-old Kur as a very quiet, intelligent, responsible, serious student and a sociable person who was well-known in his residence. He says Kur's father, Lual Kur, left to Khartoum on Tuesday, traveling by road via the town of Reng.
If he gets opportunity to travel from Reng, then he will proceed to Khartoum so that he will go and follow up the case. But if he does not find a way, definitely he will wait until Khartoum airport reopens so that he will go and follow up with the police case and find out what had happened there.
Yusuf says so far there is no clear police report on his nephew's death. He says family members in Khartoum have opened a police case and are engaging both Sudanese and South Sudanese officials to ensure they investigate Kur's death. Deng Dawa Tao Deng, South Sudan's deputy foreign minister, declined to comment on the matter, saying his ministry has yet to receive a comprehensive report about South Sudanese in Khartoum. However, Deng has said the government is concerned about South Sudanese in Sudan and is monitoring the situation closely. According to media reports, at least 7 people have been killed and dozens of others injured as security forces crack down on pro-democracy demonstration. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The South Sudanese government says it is concerned about the safety of its citizens living in Sudan. The Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister says the government is monitoring the situation through its embassy in Khartoum and the Sudanese embassy in Juba, but adds he is optimistic things will get back to normal in Sudan. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng says there are nearly 1 million South Sudanese living in Khartoum and in states bordering South Sudan. He says some are South Sudanese who were in Sudan before South Sudan got its independence and are still living there, while others went to Sudan as refugees when conflict broke out in December 2013. In addition, Deng says a large number of South Sudanese who sought medical attention in Sudan and many others attending institutions of higher learning could be caught in the political crisis in Sudan.
We are very much concerned of the general situation that the South Sudanese are living in, like the rest of Sudanese in Sudan. We still encourage them to observe and to remain calm and to avoid areas of crowds because they should be in their places of where they live, and they continue to respect, you know, what the authorities are giving as a guide of Sudanese and South Sudanese and foreigners to observe in Sudan.
There have been protests daily since Monday when the military took over Sudan's transitional government and arrested many of its civilian leaders. Security forces have tried to crack down on the protests and at least 7 demonstrators have died. Following the death of one South Sudanese who was caught in a crossfire, Deng says the embassy will be collecting reports on the situation of the South Sudanese in Sudan.
We hope that South Sudanese will not be singled out by the situation, but they will continue to live the way the rest of Sudanese will live. And our advice was that they should observe and they should follow what the advice from the authorities in the Sudan and in the state, so that they remain at the law abiding, and they should also observe keenly the current situation.
Deng says the government is monitoring the situation closely and will determine if any action is required to protect the safety of South Sudanese in Sudan.
Our embassy is in Khartoum. If there's any other reasons that requires attention, we'll definitely get some attention from our embassy in Sudan. Also, the Sudanese embassy is here. We are in touch with them, and we are keenly following the unfolding situation in Sudan. We hope that quickly the situation will return to normalcy.
Deng says the South Sudan embassy will get briefings from the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Sudan, but he says based on observations of the situation, there is calm in the country today compared with yesterday. Deng says as Sudan's neighbor and a guarantor to the Juba peace agreement, the South Sudan government has called on Sudanese leaders to resolve their differences peacefully, build a coalition and return the country to stability. He says South Sudan is on standby in case it is asked to do anything in relation to the Sudan crisis.
We are calling for dialogue, we are calling for a tent and coalition building, you know, for Sudanese political forces to return to table and to discuss their issues. And as you know, in African charter, the non-interference of internal affairs of its neighbor. So this is a matter that the Sudanese themselves can resolve, and we are ready as the government of South Sudan when we are called upon to be able to give a helping hand.
Last year, President Salva Kiir mediated peace talks between the Sudanese government and several armed groups, leading to the signing of the final peace deal in Juba. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, why did the military take over a civilian-led government in Sudan? Stay tuned for answers from analysts after the break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you offer advice to your siblings? If so, what kind of advice?
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them to be respectful to everybody, old and young alike.
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them not to waste money, but to be careful in the way they handle money. I also tell them to give to people who are in need.
Hard work always pays. And if you work hard, at the end you realize something that you didn't expect. So that's the single piece of advice that I offer to my siblings.
I always tell them to they work hard in school. Then, of course, they should be open in case they want anything or lack anything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Sudan's top general, Al-Burhan, defended the army's seizure of power, saying he had ousted the government of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok to avoid civil war. Burhan accused politicians of inciting against the armed forces. Joseph Sigley, the director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discusses the military takeover and the alleged justification of it with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
Civilians in Sudan are not a threat to the army. Even in the massive protest of 2019, these were very peaceful. And during the transition process, it's not the civilians who've had the weapons. They're not making threats. So this was not a crisis. And in fact, it was the military that has been creating a narrative about there being a crisis in the past month and growing tensions and growing crime and other challenges, which they then blamed on the civilians and then used as a pretext for their dissolution of the transition government. So this appears to be a highly choreographed effort on the part of the military to rationalize their coup effectively.
The military takeover brought a halt to Sudan's transition to democracy 2 years after a popular uprising toppled long-ruling autocrat Omar al-Bashir. Al-Burhan said the military's action did not amount to a coup, and the army move aims to correct the course to a transition and a new government that would be formed with no typical politicians. What does that mean in terms of commitment by the military to the democratic transition in Sudan?
Regardless of what General Burhan calls it, this was a coup, the military taking over the government, and it isn't in the military's authority to decide if, when, and how to derail the transition. So having just dissolved the transition process, the military doesn't have much credibility in claiming that it can now lead the transition. And in fact, I think it just exposes the military's unwillingness to allow civilians to lead the government in Sudan. Let's remember that the military has been in control of government in Sudan for all but 10 years since Sudan's independence in 1956. And so they have many vested interests in continuing that process, their political interest, their economic interest, where the military is estimated to control some 250 different businesses and so generate significant revenues. The military doesn't want to face scrutiny for the alleged human rights abuses they committed during the Bashir regime. And so I think effectively this move means that the military government is a continuation of the Bashir regime. We've had the interlude here for the last 2 years of this attempted transition, but with the military seizing power now, it really is a continuation of the mindset and structures that we had in place under Bashir.
Western countries have denounced the coup, called for the detained cabinet ministers to be freed, and said they will cut off aid if the military does not restore power sharing with civilians. U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, said Washington is deeply alarmed over the reports of the military takeover, adding that it puts U.S. assistance at risk. Would such pressure deter the military leaders in Sudan and push them to restore the democratic transition?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. However, Sudan is facing a severe economic crisis. This has been a crisis that's been developing for years because of the economic mismanagement and corruption of the Bashir regime. Sudan, you know, currently faces inflation of over 400%. Sudan has a huge debt estimated to be up to $1.2 trillion by 2025. This is for a country with a GDP of about $20-25 billion. So these problems are not going away, and they will only grow worse, and it'll create even more social economic pressure. The only way those are going to be resolved is if there's extensive Western economic engagement. And so it appears that by dissolving the transition, Burhan has decided to act to preserve the short-term interest of the military, but in the process, he hasn't considered the medium-term interest of the country, nor for that matter is he considered the medium-term interest of the military, which is now going to have to own all of these problems and try to find solutions for which it doesn't have the resources to address.
That's Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with VOA's senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi. The Global Center for Adaptation says climatic change will push 120 million people into extreme poverty by 2030, and a third of them will be Africans if nothing is done to mitigate its effects. The findings are in the center's report on Africa, released Tuesday. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Speaking in Nairobi at the release of a report looking at present-day and future climate change risks in Africa, the head of the Global Centre on Adaptation, Patrick Vauken, says the climate crisis may create millions of poor people on the continent.
In fact, worldwide, climate change, if unchecked, will push 122 million new people into extreme poverty by 2030. Of these, in sub-Saharan Africa alone, 43 million new poor people pushed into poverty by climate change. And even if development is rapid and inclusive, up to 12 million people in Africa could be pushed into poverty in this time due to climate change alone.
The Netherlands-based organization that works on climate adaptation solutions around the globe said Africa's failure to adapt to the recurrent climate shocks will also increase the cost of borrowing, reducing investment opportunities for its people. According to the Africa Development Bank, AFDB, the continent needs $7 to $15 billion a year to create adaptation programs. Akinwumi Adesina, the Africa Development Bank president, says it is making $25 billion available to scale up climate change adaptation actions and drive investment in green growth.
We will scale up access to climate-smart digital technologies and associated data-driven agricultural and financial services to at least 30 million farmers in Africa. Infrastructure. We will ensure that climate risk and resilience are integrated in at least 50% of total value of new infrastructure investments in Africa across all infrastructure sectors.
The AFDB said it will invest $8 billion to create sustainable jobs for Africa's youth and innovative financial initiatives that help increase financial flows for adaptation and resilience. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, addressing the gathering online, said his government is ready to handle the adverse effect of climate change.
To implement our nationally determined contributions, we plan to invest approximately $8 billion over the next 10 years. This is just 10% of the total investment needed of the NDCs, and we therefore need support from our international partners.
Vauquhain says, apart from the effort to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, investing in communication tools, water and health can help Africa.
A dollar invested in weather and climate information services, $1, gives between $4 and $25 in benefits. A dollar invested in resilient water and sanitation not only saves lives, it creates between $2 and $12 in benefits. African countries that invest a dollar in climate-smart crops can see between $2 and $14 in benefits. Adaptation, again, the central message, makes economic sense.
High-level officials and heads of state from around the world are scheduled to meet in Glasgow, Scotland on Sunday for the COP26 climate summit and to accelerate action towards the goals of the 2019 Paris Agreement meant to limit global warming. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to the Central African Republic, where the United Nations Refugee Agency says it has restarted a voluntary repatriation operation for thousands of refugees from the Central African Republic who were living in the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Over the past 2 years, the UN Refugee Agency has helped more than 5,000 refugees return from Congo to the Central African Republic. The voluntary operation, which has been interrupted on two occasions, resumed on Friday. The program was first halted in March 2020, when both countries closed their borders to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The second interruption occurred last December, when violence surrounding the CAR presidential elections sent an estimated 92,000 refugees fleeing into the DRC. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says a first group of 250 refugees left Mole Camp to Zongo City in the northwestern DRC last Friday. She says a second group of 250 people left the camp on Tuesday morning. Later in the day, she says a 20-minute boat ride will ferry the refugees across the Ubangi River to Bangui, the CAR capital.
People are only returning to areas where security has improved in the past 6 months, such as Bangui and the prefectures of Mbele, Mpoko and Lobai. Most of those set to return fled their homes because of violence in 2013. UNHCR and partners will soon organize voluntary repatriation flights for refugees living in Inca camp in north of Bangui province, and air transport is necessary due to the distances and poor roads.
The voluntary repatriation began in November 2019. That followed the signing of a tripartite agreement between the CAR and DRC in July. Mantu says nearly 10,000 refugees in three camps hosting them have signed up for voluntary repatriation.
UNHCR is providing assistance to the returning refugees and together with partners is working on reintegration projects in CAR, including in education and agriculture. Some 206,346 CAR refugees live in camps and with host communities in DRC's three provinces, and UNHCR and partners plan to assist 6,500 of them to return this year.
Since violence between armed groups erupted in 2013, more than 680,000 refugees and asylum seekers have fled to Cameroon, the DRC, the Republic of the Congo, and Chad. About a third are being hosted in DRC. Another 630,000 people are displaced within Central African Republic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with the Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sora.
Bitu Brothers, Maski and Freedom Boys, Nam, WJ, Timogan, let them know. I am. Go. Na na na. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Sora, Sora, Mama Sora, Fata Lechua, Ana Bakalela, Binti Kunwe, Narubayo. Ana suta mazotani, ana makalela, mama sora fatale chua.
Zongela zoya zobi matam koro kore makwes Ebi uguruche emuru samawe jimna Bishu nupi bende tama mara mitai Bishu nuna mara zotu hasi swa Itai hata lo kwili lipi bende zot Ana maga lela defi kasto Mara bitai bidoro kosfi disco Itakarami rasi tobe kalam gurush Ashangurush alela de mafam kwes Mara bitai mabu shuba ana kwesa Mayun bito Make heba ana kwebe gilvato Ashan rasmi tokara Bekalam guru, just up walking by. Mama na bitai, one more step. He gives a say. Loka inta jai pi baby tai. So di japa.
Mama sora fata lechua. Ana makalela. Binti kunwe arubayo. Ana makalela. Ana suta mazotani. Ana makalela. Mama sora fata lechua. Ana makalela.
Oh mama sora. Malu intazede, ana marikal, itaya bikulana, aburaste, asa inti buga bige simu sambala, mimi adikulu mama sora, kamsi inti shilu barade, weta kan promisana, nalita obikun marataya, mika gigeni kambasu itabe kurus, ashan ana meski. Mama Zora, mami muscula, rabuna biwadi, leana tani. Kamasu wana zede mama, ukora ita bisekiri muhaba, tangina de, ya, ya, ya.
Mama Zora, fata lechua, ana makalela, binti kunwe, arubayo. Ana makalela, ana suta, mazotani. Ana makalela, mama Zora, fata lechua.
We've been listening to Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sora. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Because it was somebody. Meet me at the cool mama's alright.